interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National Guard...
secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird. Where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it. We go in the field to investigate. Let's start tonight with a horrible story from China. It's about a 41-year-old woman who recently learned to drive. She just got her first driver's license in May, and she bought a Lexus RX 270 SUV. She was practicing how to park in an underground parking garage. So the woman was sitting there behind the wheel. Her six-year-old daughter was next to her in the passenger seat. Her husband was behind the vehicle, giving her tips on how to back it up. Suddenly, she heard her husband scream. She stuck her head out the window, realized that she had squished him. And she immediately, of course, intended to accelerate to pull away from him, but she forgot to change gears from reverse to forward. Instead, when she hit the accelerator, she completely crushed him, killed him instantly, and at the same time, lodged her head between the car and the wall there. The kid's screaming. Somebody calls the authorities. By the time they get there, both of them are dead. And that's right, the woman and her husband, both dead in a matter of a few moments in this attempt to park the car, and I bet you that six-year-old will never get behind the wheel of a vehicle. Ugh, that's just awful. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. We're just sort of trying to keep dry here in wonderful Western North Carolina.
That's what I hear. You know, for those who don't know, I am still here broadcasting from Puerto Rico in the heart of the Bermuda Triangle. You and Shelley are in Asheville, and gosh, it's just literally coming down cats and dogs there, huh?
Well, I know earlier in the week it was just crazy, like Tuesday or Wednesday night, I know it was crazy, and we've had some, I don't think we've had two straight dry days.
No.
I can't remember the last time we've had two straight dry days.
Wow. And, well, you know, it's fascinating because investigator Shelley Wright of Wright's Coin Shop, you were talking about how some of the bridges have been getting flooded out in the area recently. And it occurred to me that all this rain started right when I left Asheville to come down here to Puerto Rico. So how do you explain that?
I don't know. I think maybe you're the one that's got some explaining to do.
Well, I came to the ocean. There's a lot of... I'm on an island. I'm surrounded by water. But now you guys are sort of becoming surrounded by water yourselves. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm telekinetically...
I need to go set up a cloud buster is what I need to do.
That's it.
Well, you know, Forrest, that's not a bad idea. I mean, this would be the situation to call for it. I mean, this is getting dangerous now there for you guys.
I think you might set up a cloud buster down there in Puerto Rico to make the weather feel nice, and we're getting the residuals from the downside of it down here. Maybe we need to go put one up here so people out in Colorado can get some of this rain.
Well, you know, that's always been the big question with the Cloudbuster business. You know, Cloudbusters are devices that, when implemented properly, can actually manipulate the weather. They're relatively simple to use. An individual can use one in his or her own backyard. But you're right, Forrest. We're sort of living in a big bubble here. And if I make, you know, it dry over my house, that moisture is going to be shifted somewhere else. And that's one of the reasons Cloudbuster technology has always been kept kind of secretive. But now with the Internet, maybe enough people have figured out how to use Cloudbusters that they're just creating these chaotic weather systems.
Well, that, or maybe there's so many people that are using them that, I mean, it's chaos up there. The weather doesn't know how, and I mean, they might be canceling each other out and causing all kinds of havoc.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I actually got caught in a pretty torrential storm out at sea yesterday, as a matter of fact. So we have gotten some rain down here, and I'll tell you guys about that. I had a really interesting day. You know, I told you guys on the last show that I was going to be going out onto the ocean and spending some time learning more about these areas where fishermen see UFOs. And I had a really interesting time. We'll maybe get to that next segment. But also, let me tell you what we're going to talk about hour number two, when we usually do something with a bit of a theme. We were discussing before the show began how it's rough enough to be there in Asheville when you're getting bombarded by rain like this. But what if you were out in the midst of it 24 hours a day walking the Appalachian Trail? Because 3 months ago, we interviewed a man named Colin Lee, who is, I believe, 35 years old, and he had decided to realize a lifelong dream of walking the entire Appalachian Trail, all 2,200 miles of it from Georgia to Maine. And we talked to him in April on the very first night he set out on the trail. So here it is. This is supposed to be, he planned 6 months for this, and so we're kind of right in the middle of it, and he's apparently right on schedule. He's about 1,000 miles or so into the Appalachian Trail, and we're going to attempt to contact him tonight. You never can tell, because this guy, he's out there in the middle of nowhere, and we may or may not get a signal. I, on the other hand, you know, I'm down here in the Bermuda Triangle. My signals go in and out, so this is going to be interesting to see if we can all, you know, snatch some similar wavelength here that we can communicate on for a little while. But we're going to try to talk to him and see what his life has been like, truly enduring the weather. And then also, in hour two, the second thing we're going to talk about is this breaking story regarding the Minnesota Iceman. Have you heard this, Forrest?
Yes.
Okay, well, good. And actually, it's funny because this almost takes on a bit of a personal twist now for me. And we'll, we won't tell people exactly what's happened. We'll tease them a little bit. But the Minnesota Iceman mystery goes back to the 1960s. And this was a creature, if you will, put on display that started appearing in various festivals, sideshows, carnivals, fairs. And there was a great deal of debate over whether it was real or not. And then suddenly it just disappeared, and it was gone for decades. And I never thought we would ever see the Minnesota Iceman again. Well, guess what? He has not only reappeared, he's reappeared in a big way. And I'll tell you about that as well. And, you know, this is one of these shows, Forrest, where if you have ADD, you're going to love the show tonight. Because we're going to be jumping all over the place. You would not believe the stack of stories I have of just weird news. We're going to squeeze as much of this stuff in as possible. We're going to talk about my latest little adventure down here in Puerto Rico and what I've learned about the UFO stuff down here. We're going to talk to Colin Lee out there walking the Appalachian Trail. We're digging into the Minnesota Iceman. The Dark 30 Hour is darker than ever. And I don't even know how we're going to make it through all this material. But it's one of those shows. You know, sometimes, guys, I say, oh, we have a fantastic show tonight, and you can kind of tell, like, I'm not sure if he means that. Yeah.
You're lying.
Yeah. I'm just trying to sell the show. It's like, keep listening, please. But no, tonight, it's the real deal. You know, this is one of those where I feel confident enough to say, you know, call your friends, call your family, tell them to tune in, especially if it's a rainy night where you are. Turn on the radio. It's a free show. And you're going to really enjoy some of the stories that we're going to dig into tonight. Before we go to our first break, here's an interesting story from Japan. Scientists there have cloned an entire mouse from a single drop of blood. How about that? The team at the Riken Bio Resource Center said all they needed was a blood cell from a donor mouse's tail. And so they got this drop of blood from one mouse's tail and created a whole new mouse that lived with a normal lifespan. And, you know, if they can do that with a mouse, and all creatures are basically built from the same organic carbon-based material, can we do that with anything now? You know, there's been a quest to clone a woolly mammoth for a long time. And just recently, for the first time, a woolly mammoth was discovered that had liquid blood still inside of its veins. It had not frozen for whatever reason. They say that they believe that those woolly mammoths had some kind of an anti-coagulant, anti-freezing type deal in their blood, similar to how some of these fish survive that are far, far deep in the cold ocean. It should be no problem now to reproduce a woolly mammoth, maybe even the real Jurassic Park, but certainly cloning human beings. And if you can clone a whole human being from a drop of blood, it almost makes you wonder, are you just the blood? I mean, it always reminds me of that kind of creepy part of the book of Genesis when Cain kills Abel and he's trying to hide it. And God says, what happened to your brother? And Cain says, I don't know. And God says, no, I can hear his blood. It's crying out to me from the earth, you know, or something like that. And it's like, ugh, maybe there's some truth to that. We're going to take a break. When we get back, I'm going to tell you about what I learned regarding the UFO phenomenon here in Puerto Rico, the Bermuda Triangle. And then we're going to dig into some of these wild stories. Stories from across the country and across the world, but also one that's fairly close to home there in North Carolina, an update on what they call the Bladenboro Beast. The Beast of Bladenboro, yeah. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. We dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, and the downright strange. Stick around. We're about to kick off Speaking Strange. terrestrial highway. I'm your host, the Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange. Thanks for spending your Saturday night with us, and my goodness, the diversity of topics we are going to dig into tonight is slightly mind-boggling. First off, let me give you guys an update on some of my latest adventures here in Puerto Rico. Of course, I have been here for months now, and I have heard some of the most amazing stories about incredible UFO sightings. And I had a really fascinating, unforgettable day yesterday. I have made several attempts to go out on the ocean with some of the fishermen who had seen UFOs and see the exact places, but we had had problems every time. Usually there was the sea was just too rough, or there were some one of the guys got sick, etc. So finally yesterday, everything came together. We got up very early in the morning and set out and spent a whole day on the ocean. And I must tell you, and you know, it's funny because it's one thing when you go out on the ocean on some little commercial ship. It's another thing when you're just with, like, a dude on his boat, you know, and it's like a little six-passenger boat. And it was just myself and the fisherman and Lauren. And I must say, by the end of the day, I felt like I'd just been sandblasted in the face all day. Was just, you know, the saltwater spray and the sun, and gosh, at the end of the day, I was sunburned, my eyes were bloodshot, I was really just was so exhausted. I mean, I just came home and went straight to sleep, and gives me a lot of respect for what these fishermen do. But this is a particular fisherman whose stories are really amazing. Is named Enrico, and he was born here and has been a fisherman all his life. I mean, he started fishing professionally when he was only 9 or 10 years old. So he has seen some of the more significant things. He is the guy who saw, I'm sure I've talked about this on the show, he was out in the ocean at one point, and he looked over, and there was a big flying saucer sitting right next to his boat, and it kind of shot off away from the boat and then back to him and then away from the boat and back to him a couple times and then zipped away. On another occasion, he was out fishing at night. I think he said his father was with him, and they saw this huge blinding light underneath the ocean, in the water, you know. And he wasn't in the mood to figure out what it was that night, so he got the heck out of there. But it was in an area where a lot of people say they see these UFOs go into the water, and at that point really become what they call USOs. So anyway, we're on this boat. And we're going we're down the coastline. We're in the Caribbean Sea, actually. And we were going past the spot where there's a lighthouse called the Cabo Rojo Lighthouse. And sort of behind the lighthouse, a bit to the northeast, is the Laguna. So we were very close to the Laguna Cartagena, what I call the UFO Lagoon, where so many people see these UFOs. And and he said, you know, there are submarines that pass through this area all the time. And he claimed that the fishermen know that the submarines go into tunnels that are under the land, that go inland, and they go up next to the Laguna. And I was like, really? And he said, yeah. He said, and he goes, as a matter of fact, look right over there. And we looked over to the side, and we saw a periscope sticking up out of the water. Sure enough, we had binoculars, and, you know, it looked like a periscope sticking up to me. And he said that these submarines, they go back to a base, and at one point we got an angle where we could see this base. And I had no idea there was a Navy base up there. In fact, it's restricted. You can't get too close to it. You're not even supposed to photograph it. Of course, I did take a picture of it, so maybe I can get that posted somewhere. But anyway, you could see like a big white satellite dish sticking up and the tops of these white buildings. And I thought it was just fascinating that, okay, you have some kind of Navy base with submarines right next to the UFO Lagoon, and then you go right past that, and here you have Monkey Island, as they call it, okay, which is the place where most of the monkeys live now. And as we passed the island, I didn't get to see one. I'm so frustrated. I still haven't seen a monkey. But right past Monkey Island is this other island that has an old laboratory sitting there, and that was the original laboratory where the monkeys were brought over here to be experimented on in 1938. And of course, they eventually escaped, and now they're running amok. But at one point, Enrico, we're right there in a little area called Parguera, and it has a lot of little islands around. And so Enrico, he pulled the boat right up next to the shore, where there was kind of like this little opening and almost like a concrete dock there next to the island where the laboratory is. And it's kind of raining at this point, and it's all drizzly, and it's very spooky. And so he goes, watch this. And he reaches down under his seat and pulls out some crackers, like saltine crackers, and tosses them out onto this little concrete dock. And all of a sudden, I counted 11 iguanas just came out of nowhere, just a pack of them, just running out and attacking these crackers. And it turns out that these are not the green iguanas that were brought over here as pets in the 1950s. These are the native Puerto Rican iguanas that come from a little island off the coast called Isla Mona. And you can tell the difference because the ones that were brought here as pets are bright green, and these are grayish looking, and they're much more primordial looking with all kinds of weird bumps. And I mean, they kind of look like little dragons, frankly. And it's weird how animated and active these things are. They love crackers, you know, so we're just throwing crackers at this pack of iguanas, and they're going nuts. So anyway, after that, we go off, and he's pointing out to me where different people have seen different UFOs, and we finally found this nice little island. I think it was called Caracolas, and it was all the water around it was like a swimming pool. It was really clear and warm, and so we jumped out in the water and just swam around this island and snorkeled and everything. So it was a very, very fun day, and so we got back to the our starting point here. And so and Lauren and I, we have a place close enough that all we had to do was just walk to get back to our place. So we told him goodbye, and right as we started walking back, the sky opened up and the rain came pouring, a sight that you guys are very used to by now, Forrest and Shelley. And so we decided to jump into the nearest door to get out of the rain, and there was a restaurant slash bar there. So we went into this restaurant slash bar, we sit down, start drinking, and I start talking to the lady behind the bar about the day that we just had. And I was like, ah, yeah, we just went out with this fisherman, and he was telling us all about the UFO stuff. And she said to me, oh, well, a friend of mine saw a UFO just a few months ago as well. And I said, oh, really? Because, you know, I'm not that surprised, but every time I hear it, you know, I want to hear what these people say next. She says, yeah. Says he saw it right there in Lajas. It's like, boom, right there. That's where all the other stuff seems to be centered. And she goes, he actually got a picture of it on his cell phone. And I said, what? That's the first time I've heard anybody say that, okay? There are a lot of people with some crazy stories, but I had not heard that anybody had a picture of one yet. And so I said I would give a lot to see that picture. And so here we are, the day of the Internet, the age of the Internet. She starts digging around on her phone. And when we come back, I will tell you what she showed me. And what I'm beginning to think is happening here with this UFO phenomenon. And then I've got a crazy story we're going to dig into. I've got one from Montana, another joker on the loose, but I certainly want to talk about this new story regarding the vampire beast of Bladenboro, North Carolina. Apparently, he's back in action, too. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Attraction. strangers around the globe. I am Joshua P. Warren, and you are listening to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual. And before we get back to that unusual stuff, want to make a little announcement I'm very proud of. Of course, you guys probably know that I am one of the producers of a big event this fall called Puppy Fest in Asheville, North Carolina. It's a one-day event, September 28th. The name kind of says it all, Puppy Fest. It's a big celebration in search of tomorrow's star puppy. It's almost like a puppy personality contest. And we think it's going to be a big hit. It's at the Asheville Civic Center, called the U.S. Cellular Center. But the big announcement is Puppy Fest is now officially sponsored by the Asheville Humane Society and Brother Wolf Animal Rescue. So we are extremely happy about that, and we're going to be doing some animal adoptions and, of course, raising money for those charities. So if you would like to be a part of Puppy Fest, go to puppyfest.com. We now have slots available for vendors. It only costs $125 to get a really nice booth, and we can send you all that information if you just email us through puppyfest.com. Simple enough, it's contact@puppyfest.com. Okay, so here I am in this restaurant at this bar, and the lady behind the bar tells me that her friend, this guy she's known for years and years and years, and a guy that her husband has known even longer, was in Lajas, the area where most of this paranormal stuff is centered here on the west coast of Puerto Rico, and saw a UFO and was able to capture it on his cell phone. So she goes digging around, and she found this picture and showed me her cell phone. And it was a really good picture. It is a cow pasture, and hovering over this cow pasture is this classic flying saucer. And you can see that it almost looks like it's spinning or something, because it has these sort of like cyclone arms that are sticking off of the sides. I mean, it's just a really cool photo. And I said, I've got to have this photo. And she says, okay, I'll definitely send it to you. So we exchanged information and everything. And I haven't gotten the photo yet. She's emailed me today, and she's trying to get this photo sent over to me, but we've had a technical problem. Let's hope it doesn't go too far. But once I get this photograph, hopefully I'll be able to get permission to post it so all of you can see it. And this will be the first UFO photograph that I will have discovered here that I can break and reveal to all of you who know that that's why I came down here, to get that sort of stuff. And I just couldn't believe that, you know, in one day I go out and I have this big crazy day where we're running around looking at the hidden Navy bases and the submarine tunnels and the places where the UFOs and USOs are seen and where the monkeys were experimenting on and where the lizards are running around. And we do all that stuff, and then I go back and stumble into this restaurant out of the rain, and the woman there behind the bar has this amazing UFO picture. Is that not more than coincidence, Forrest?
It is. I mean, the stars must have been aligned somehow for you to get all this information at one time, Who knows?
Yeah. Today was a good day. Now, Shelley, I know that you're sort of in tune with the mystical forces in the universe. Was yesterday a special day for you at all?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't.
All the energy was swirling around me then, the whole vortex.
All the good energy was swirling around you.
I've created a vacuum of good fortune in North Carolina. I sucked it all out.
You sucked it all out.
Now, here's what I'm beginning to conclude. I keep looking at, like, what's the common factor here? I mean, let's look at some of the things that we know, all right? There's a lagoon here that on the surface doesn't appear to be anything spectacular. It's a lagoon. It's in a remote place. There's military activity nearby. These UFOs are seen all the time there. Many of them have crashed around there. They're going in and out of the water. You know, there are government experiments that have been taking place nearby there, the lab there where the monkeys are. What's the common denominator and why? And the more I've thought about it, I think that maybe the most outstanding factor is that lagoon, Laguna Cartagena, it sits right in the hills that are the oldest land in the entire Caribbean. So something like 750 million years ago, when land first began to peak up out of the ocean, the very first place that it happened in the Caribbean is where that lagoon is. And so it makes me think that if these UFOs, whatever they are, you know, call them extraterrestrials or interdimensionals or whatever, if they've been coming here for thousands of years, maybe millions of years, we have no idea how advanced they are. They could be ageless. You know, they could be divine beings that have always been. We don't know what they are. But if they were visiting Earth long, long ago, and they needed, you know, they wanted to explore some land, or they needed a base to land somewhere, if they were going to be in that area of the Caribbean, well, that's the only place they could have landed. That was the only terra firma to explore. And therefore, it seems that maybe that just happened to be the place where they set up their first base in the area, and they're still using that base. Does that make sense? What do you think about that, Forrest?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, if it why what am I trying to say? Go to an area that you know. Why, like, blaze, explore areas that you're not sure of, but where you have familiar territory?
And not to say that there aren't, you know, other bases around, but that would certainly, you know, explain why that would be a big one for them.
Right.
The oldest one might be right there. And something else that I'm going to try to get posted here is on the speakingofstrange.com website, a researcher named Jorge Martin. And I know Jorge Martin. I've met him in person early on when I started doing research down here years and years ago. He's a fantastic researcher. He's one of the few Puerto Ricans who has devoted his life to really digging into these UFO mysteries. And Jorge, apparently he posted some images online that are sort of like satellite images. And if these things are authentic, they show what looks to be some kind of a structure underneath the water, a huge structure under the water off the south coast of Puerto Rico. So if you're looking at a map of Puerto Rico, on the bottom south coast, there's a city kind of right in the middle called Ponce. And this structure, which it's a very well-defined, it looks like a hallway. It's a long rectangular structure. It goes all the way from Ponce through the entire east side of the island, all the way, the whole length of the east side of the island, still in the ocean, over to the island of Vieques. So I'll get that posted, and you can take a look at it. But let me also make this very clear for everybody. I am going to be coming back to Asheville in September to work on Puppy Fest. So I only have slots available for one more paranormal expedition with me down here. And that's going to be in late August. So if you want to go on a paranormal expedition here in Puerto Rico in the Bermuda Triangle and get a Bermuda Triangle certificate of investigation saying you have been there, you know how to investigate it. If you want to explore the city of Old San Juan and go to the Bio Bay and the rainforest and see the Chapel of Miracles and all these things, this is the time, okay? I'm going to keep the group small, less than 10 people, and go to ParanormalPuertoRico.com, ParanormalPuertoRico.com, and let me know if you want to come on one of these adventures, because this may be the last time I'm ever able to do it. And so that'll be late August. But, okay, there is so much stuff. I got to keep moving on. I got to keep pressing forth. This Beast of Bladenborough deal, this is kind of a bigger story, so we're going to get to that when we come back from our break. So let me go ahead and bring up this story from Montana. A 24-year-old man is in court right now because this guy ran into a police department there in Montana and screamed, "Surprise!" and started pepper spraying the policeman in the face. And now, can you imagine that? I mean, the insanity of this. Surprise! He sprays them in the face. One of the officers shot the guy with a taser, but it didn't work. Yeah, but it didn't work on the guy. And so he sprayed several of these officers until they were able to subdue him. And all the while, the man was laughing hysterically. There's a picture of him on the news story here. And this guy has the biggest you-know-what eaten grin on his face. And he has long, curly, dark hair. And he tells everybody that he is the Joker. Oh, boy. Here we go again. We remember what the last Joker did. Let's hope that this one doesn't do anything more than pepper spray. That's bad enough. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, yes, a new story about the vampire beast of Bladenboro, North Carolina. This is a story that goes all the way back to the 1950s. A lot of cryptid activity. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
You hardly ever saw Granddaddy down here. You only come a down.
Next hour, well, if all goes well, we're going to try to catch a signal and talk to Colin Lee, who is halfway through his journey hiking the entire length of the Appalachian Trail. And we'll see what his past 3 months have been like since he's right smack in the middle. Before I get to the story about the Bladenboro Beast, let me ask you this real quick. How many of you listening would like to have an extra $200 every month? Well, that's how much that I saved last month using my Sunshine Simple solar generator, because when you use the electricity from the power company, they're ripping you off. But when you use the power produced by the Sunshine Simple generator, well, that's free. It's from the sun. And you can do that easily. The generator only costs around $1,500. And so imagine if you're saving $200 a month, depending on your usage. It could be more, could be less, whatever. How quickly will that pay for itself? Go to sunshinesimple.com and take a look at the free video there to learn about the generator and not only how it can save you money, but can keep your lights on and keep your appliances running when the regular grid is down. SunshineSimple.com. So, obviously, Forrest, you and I are natives of North Carolina. I know Shelley is as well, but Forrest, you and I have an interest in cryptozoology, and I know we've talked before about beasts like the Bladenboro Beast, right?
Yes.
You ever heard of this, Shelley?
No, I don't think so.
This goes back to 1953. The overview is the Beast of Bladenboro refers to a creature responsible for a string of deaths amongst animals around Bladenboro, North Carolina, in the winter of 1953 and 54. According to several of the witnesses and many trackers, they think it was likely some kind of a huge wildcat. But nobody knows for sure, and that's why the whole story has lent itself to cryptozoology. Witnesses often describe this creature, when they got a glimpse of it, as being, quote, sleek and black and about 5 feet long, end quote. One of the first incidents occurred December 31st of 1953. Two dogs belonging to a Bladenboro man named Johnny Vouse were found dead. There was a significant amount of blood at the scene, and the two dogs were, quote, torn into ribbons and crushed, end quote. He said, my dogs put up a good fight. There was blood all over the porch, big puddles of it, and there was a pool of saliva on the porch. It killed one dog at 10:30 and left it lying there. My dad wrapped the dog up in a blanket. The thing came back and got that dog, and nobody's seen that dog since. At 1:30 in the morning, it came back and killed the other dog and took off. We found it 3 days later in a hedgerow. The top of one of the dog's heads was torn off, and its body was crushed and wet like it had been in that thing's mouth. The other dog's lower jaw was torn off. Now, these stories go on and on and on like this from 53 and 54. A lot of dogs, rabbits, let's see here, what is this, cats, of course. I mean, doesn't matter. These pets were just being devoured by whatever this thing is. And then all of a sudden it just stopped in 1954, as is so often the case, and nobody has any idea what it was. Well, now, listen to this, brand new story. Vampire Beast of North Carolina kills again. Now, they're calling it vampire because in some cases, these animals were not torn to pieces, but they had just been drained of blood. Okay, it appeared that something had almost been sucking the blood out, which is why that some people think that this doesn't seem like a typical panther or something along those lines. Story says the vampire beast of North Carolina has killed again, draining four more victims of their blood. In this case, three horses and a large bull mastiff dog. The vampire beast in North Carolina has been killing now for over 50 years, and it says here the wounds are puncture wounds to the neck. No one knows what this beast is, and maybe it will go for 20 years before it kills again. It is a great mystery. So, Forrest, now you're a Mr. Geography. Where is Bladenboro?
Bladenboro is down in the southeast portion of North Carolina, about... it's almost all the way, it's like one county away from the coast, I believe. It's down, northeast of Columbia, South Carolina.
All right. Well, you know, the funny thing is, when you get on the radio, when you're doing like a major drive time show, and you say, who's seen a big cat in North Carolina? The phone lines light up, and lots of people say they've seen a big cat. Is this a cat? I don't know.
Well, I mean, according to wildlife experts, there are no cougars in the area, but people swear there are cougars up here in this area.
Especially at the bars about 1 o'clock in the morning. It gets really bad. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll see if we can touch base with Colin Lee out there on the Appalachian Trail. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Let it